I'm Alan Thorpe.
And I'm David Rogers, and together we host the Weather Pod.
In this special series on artificial intelligence, we invite leading experts to reveal how AI is being used across all sectors of the global weather enterprise.
We want to find out how business, the public sector, and academia are using AI. Can it help improve the accuracy and quality of weather and climate information?
Can it help to make weather and climate information more useful and usable across a range of critical activities that are impacted by weather and climate?
There are many claims being made about AI, but what is its real value when it comes to helping business and society meet the growing climate challenge? Our guest this episode is Irina Sandu, the Director of Destination Earth, or DESTINY, at the European Centre for Medium Range Weather Forecasts, the ECMWF. DESTINY is a flagship initiative of the European Union to develop a digital twin of planet Earth, and the ECMWF is one of three organisations working on the project, along with the European Space Agency and EUMETSAT, the European Organisation for the Exploitation of Meteorological Satellites. Launched at the end of 2021, the initial priority of the project is to develop two digital twins, one focused on weather-induced extremes and the other on climate change adaptation. It will also build what's called a digital twin engine, which will be the software infrastructure required to handle the enormous amounts of data the project will require and then generate. At its simplest, the overall aim is to build the European Union's digital capabilities to help meet the growing challenges of climate change and extreme weather events. The intention is that the project will have practical applications across many key areas of the economy and society, ranging from urban planning, power generation and flood risk management and adaptation, to air quality forecasting, the evolution of wildfires, and the simulation of extreme weather events. In this episode, we explore the technical aspects of the project and then turn our focus on the potential end users for the information the project will produce and how they will actually be able to interact with the system to assist their activities.
Irina, welcome to the Weather Pod. Great to see you.
Yeah, very warm welcome, Irina. Great to have you here today.
Thank you very much for the invitation. Great to see you too.
Irina, Destination Earth, or DESTINY for short, is an EU program rooted in the weather and climate domain. Can you outline the program, who's involved, what it hopes to achieve, and also tell us about your role as the project leader?
Sure. Destination Earth is an ambitious initiative of the European Commission to augment really our capabilities in support of the Green Deal data strategy and digital transition. And it aims to build a digital replica of the Earth to boost our ability to respond and adapt to climate change and extreme events. And it really complements existing Earth system predictive capabilities at national and European level. What it does in practice is to set up a unique capability to perform bespoke, cutting-edge numerical simulations to explore various scenarios, how the planet will evolve in various situations, to better understand and prepare for the impacts of climate change and extreme events. What it will also do is really produce Earth system and impact sector information globally at much higher resolutions than at the moment, with what we call local granularity, really at scales where the impacts of climate change and extreme events are observed. It is led by the European Commission Directorate General for Communication Networks, Content and Technology, DG Connect. And it's implemented by three entities: the European Centre for Medium Range Weather Forecasts, where I work, the European Space Agency, ESA, and the European Satellite Agency, EUMETSAT. And each of us is really responsible for developing a component of what we call the new Destination Earth system. At ECMWF, we are responsible for developing the digital twins, with two first priority digital twins, one on weather-induced extreme events on a timescale of a few days ahead, and one on climate change adaptation on a timescale of several decades ahead. We are also responsible for delivering at TCMWF something which we call the Digital Twin Engine, which is really a software infrastructure which allows to run these digital twins and to handle their vast amounts of data, but also interact with digital twins, with the digital twins.
So, Irina, just to interject there, how many people are involved in the program, and how long will it run for?
The program will run for several phases. It has started end of 2021. We had a first phase, which just ended now in June. And now we are entering the second phase of Destination S, which lasts another 2 years until mid-2026. And then there will be a longer phase towards transition to operations, which with an aim to have an operational system delivering this digital replica in 2030. And there are really lots of people across Europe. It's fostering an important European collaboration in which we are pooling resource and expertise with of more than 100 institutions across 25 countries. Only at TCMWF, we are working with partners in 90 institutions to develop the digital twins and the digital twin engine, building really on our 50 years of expertise with working with our member states in numerical weather prediction, earth system observations, and high performance computing. These are all really key and underpinning Destination Earth. There is one other aspect that I wanted to mention, which is important as well in this partnership and who makes Destination Earth a reality, and that's the supercomputing facilities of the European High Performance Computing Joint Undertaking of the European Commission, which really has built some of the most powerful computers in the world, and these are essential for delivering Destination S.
So there are a lot of people. I guess it's difficult to know what the budget is for this program. Is there a I'm trying to get a feeling for the scale of the activity.
The budget is, I mean, yes, we can say the investment so far in the phase one and phase two, it's somewhat above, just above 300 million, around 310 million euros across all the organizations implementing this. Okay. And as I was saying, the three implementing entities are ECMWF, ESA, and EUMETSAT, but they work with a lot of partners in national med services, academia, but also industry, including SMEs.
Great. So before we dive into the detail, Irina, of the program, you've used the term already, and it's used quite widely, digital twin. And I'm not sure that I'm very clear exactly what the term means. And I think others in the global weather enterprise will also be curious to know from your point of view, sort of in general, because I know the term is used across many areas of science and technology. What does a digital twin mean in general, and how do you see it being applied in a sense to the weather domain?
Sure, that's a good question. So indeed, the term comes from industry, actually, and in industrial sectors, it has been used since a long time. And for something which is represents a fusion of numerical simulations and observations to really create a virtual replica of an object, say a wind turbine, for example, which is as indistinguishable as possible from reality. It allows to understand in industry how that product will perform in a physical world and how it can be adapted to improve its performance. Now, when we talk about digital twins of the Earth system in the context of climate change and extreme events, this can be a game changer. It complements capabilities that we already have. For example, Destination Earth digital twins are creating a modeling infrastructure which allows us to explore how the Earth system will evolve under different scenarios. Let's take the example of the climate adaptation digital twin. This represents really the first attempt to operationalize the production of global multi-decadal simulations, which for now it's done in research efforts, which have take place in the context of CIMIP every 7 to 10 years. Now we are creating an infrastructure such as that if we want to address a what if question, what if recent heat wave which took place last summer, how would this look in 2050? We have a system to answer that question. If the community comes up with a new scenario that we want to explore, how would the world would look in 2050, we can press a button and produce that simulation on demand. And is this on demand interactivity aspect? But there are other aspects as well of the interactivity, and we can dive in later on. But I would say that it's really where it differs from traditional numerical prediction systems is really in the interactivity and data handling, but also in the much higher resolutions that it's used in today's weather and climate predictions. And that's where the EuroHPC capabilities come in.
So, I mean, from what you've said, it sounds as though global and regional weather prediction and climate projection, almost as we look at the history of it, it's sort of already preconditioned to be a digital twin because we have global model, detailed models of the Earth's environment. So this is, in a sense, an evolution from those models. Is that right? It's not completely different object. It's actually building upon what we've already been doing for quite a number of years.
Exactly. It's really building on our decades of expertise in Earth system modeling observations, having these modeling systems. But it goes beyond by overcoming some of the limitation of current prediction systems, in particular in terms of versatility to access and interact with the data, but also in terms of the flexibility to change experimental design and outputs, and going to this higher resolution. Again, if we take the climate as an example, we go from cycles of 7 to 10 years producing climate information to yearly cycles and on demand. And we go from resolutions of 100 kilometers or more globally to 5 kilometers, which is what the climate digital twin is doing. But it's also aiming to couple more closely the Earth system models and the impact sector models for sectors most impacted or relevant for climate change, you know, like renewable energy. You can plug the impact sector model in the workflow to along the Earth system model and run it in parallel.
What happens? We still have a lot of uncertainty in terms of our knowledge of some processes in our current models, and higher resolution doesn't address those yet. And one particular is, of course, trying to get really good quantitative estimates of precipitation. I mean, then that's a major goal for all of us. How does the digital twin kind of handle this sort of ongoing errors or uncertainty in our numerical processes, in our understanding of the current atmosphere?
That's a very good question. Of course, going to 5 kilometer globally or even 3 kilometer doesn't solve the fact that we still don't represent explicitly all the small scale processes. And sometimes it, in particular for convection and precipitation, it can become even more complicated. So there is all, of course, a lot of work going on, not only in the destination Earth, but also in national and other European projects to continue to improve and adapt the models to these scales. And that's really important. There is a series of Horizon Europe funded projects, which are really feeding into destination Earth, in particular, looking at this, at how to better represent processes at the scale to extract the most value we can from these high resolution simulations. One is NextGEMS and the other one is ERIE, but there is a whole series coming as well. So working on processes is one, and then tackling the uncertainty, that's a total different aspect because of course at these resolutions we can afford to do one or two simulations at 5 kilometer globally. Until 2040 we can't do a large ensemble, and that's where machine learning is coming in. And in a way, it's really great, this all this AI machine learning revolution which took place in weather and climate in the last couple of years, because it answers to one of the biggest challenges destination has had of how we represent uncertainty. And I think it can really play a big role there.
When we talked to Florian a while back on another weather pod, and he did make the comment in when we were talking about AI applications, that still, because they're trained on the current models, the current historical data, and there is all of the errors that sit in those systems are propagated through the AI system. So it's still a challenge that you're st so you I guess what I'm getting at is, the digital twin is a digital twin that's evolving as the science evolves, so it's a constant process of change. It's not as if you create a digital twin and that's it. Your example of the turbine is like, well, it's pretty much fixed, right? But our understanding of the
No, it's a
environment
very
is
good
changing a
point. Of
lot.
course, it's not fixed at all. It is a continuous evolution. And of course, and that's really important for people to understand as well, that destination Earth, it's a long-term endeavor. And even if we build on decades of expertise on weather and climate science and technology, the digital twins are not completely done in these first 2 years. We see exciting things already. We have achieved a lot in the first two phase, in the first 2 years of even managing to run at these scales on brand new computers like EuroHPC, which have mixed architectures with GPUs and CPUs. But we continuously need to feed in the new science and technology advances into these digital twins. And AI, yes, AI doesn't solve everything, but I think it looks really fascinating, also from the perspective of climate. And we have a couple of studies coming up on that, where I think it's showing much more promise that I would have thought 2 years ago with my physics background.
So, Alan.
Yeah, just to pick up on the resolution point, Irina. I mean, I'm curious as to whether you see this as a leap forward in terms of resolution, because of course climate models for CMIP, et cetera, have been relatively coarse up to now. So, and those models have been critical for policy making, for IPCC, et cetera. And now you're saying, well, actually, we can do 3 kilometer resolution climate predictions suddenly, because we've got, if to paraphrase what you said, we've got a European HPC capability. So just say a little bit about how come we can do this now and we couldn't before. Is it because we're marshalling greater supercomputer capability, or what's the advance that's happened that's enabled us to do this?
There is a combination of advances which allow us to go to these resolutions of 5 kilometer, not only in the atmosphere but also in the ocean, land, and sea ice. The first is the computing power. Indeed, LUMI, the first pre-exascale computer in Europe of EuroHPC, which is located in Finland, in Kajaani. It's the fifth computer in the world in terms of computing power. The other two supercomputers that we are using from EuroHPC, or we are starting to use, Leonardo in Bologna in Italy is number 7, and Mare Nostrum 5 in Barcelona is number 8 in the world. So we are making use of a part of the resources of the top three of the best computers in the world.
Do those computers, do you use them collectively? I mean, do they work together, or do you use them as individual resources?
So we use them as individual resources. Destination Earth, through a special access call, was granted resources between 5 and 10% of the computing capacity on each computer. And we do selective simulations in selected places. Let's say for now we have run on LUMI because that's the only one which was installed and ready. Both the weather twin and the climate twin. From we are transitioning the weather induced extremes twin on Leonardo in Italy, and some of the models of the climate twin we are transitioning them on Mare Nostrum. So we are establishing a blueprint for distributed computing for weather and climate, if you want, which is another novelty. But indeed, the bigger computers are not only the only answer. What has also advanced is a lot of work on the scalability aspect of the weather and climate models over the last 10 years. CCMWF had a scalability program led over 10 years, which invested significantly in making the models faster and adapt them to a variety of computers, including mixed architectures, GPUs and CPUs, but that also existed in other countries in Europe as well. In particular, ICON now, which is one of the two models used for the climate digital twin, is running entirely its atmosphere on GPUs, thanks to these investments in scalability. And of course, there was work on this transition towards kilometer scale models.
Just before we move on, Irina, just for clarity, we've discussed on the Weather Pod the Copernicus Climate Change Service, for example, which in many respects is providing climate change information via global modeling. So there seems to be some interlinking or some similarity or what is the relationship anyway between what you're trying to do with your climate digital twin and what they're trying to do with the Climate Change Service?
The two services are really complementary. Copernicus is providing a reanalysis, which is the best estimate of the past state by fusioning observations and models. It's also providing a wealth of climate services through the Copernicus data store and access to existing climate simulations like done in the framework of CIMIP through research efforts. It's also providing seasonal forecasts. So it has a wealth of climate services and focuses on the monitoring the past and the present, while Destination Earth is setting up a complementary capability of modeling the climate decades ahead. And this modeling capability does not it doesn't exist at the moment for decades ahead in Copernicus, you know. So the two really complement each other, and they are making steps towards operationalizing climate projections, which compared to what has been the case over the past 50 years for weather, we do not have an operational capability of providing climate projection informations decades ahead.
We talked, and we've touched on it at the beginning, I think, about the digital twin is really stressing interactive capabilities and how users are able to interact with the information the twin produces and with the whole modeling system. So, I mean, who are the users? How is it used? I mean, we've talked about how it's set up and produces information, but how do you interact with this? How do you interact with the twin?
Yes, so it has, of course, this interactivity comes in different ways. There are different layers of interactivity. Ultimately, different users can interact in various ways with the workflows, the data, and ultimately the simulations. These features will gradually evolve through the program. And ultimately, it will empower users to interact with the digital twins in multiple ways. I think maybe the best is to give a few examples. As I was saying, an important interactive feature of Destination Earth will be the unique capability to produce these bespoke cutting-edge simulations. Now, of course, for example, the climate simulations, but also global weather simulations, they are expensive. So not every user can run the digital twin, but selected priority users, if there is a priority for a member state or for the EU, for some of the directorate generals in the EU to investigate, for example, the impact of a certain global policy decision or a new scenario, they can request a simulation. So that's one way of interacting. Now, the other way is how do we interact with users who want to make use of the data? And for this, we need to understand and what the users would want from such a system. And we need to ensure that the digital system is designed in a way that answers to their needs. And for that, the co-design is very important. And that's why we are working with so many partners. For example, the climate digital twin, it's implemented by the IT Center for Science in Finland. It's leading a big consortium which partners both with climate centers, excellence climate centers throughout Europe, like the Barcelona Supercomputing Center, like the Max Planck Institute in Germany, the Alfred Wegener Institute. But it's also partnering with user institutions who come with their expertise in wind energy, in hydrology models and water management systems, so that they can plug their systems, their impact models in the digital twin workflow and collect the information as this our system model is running, you know. So in the digital twins, we are experimented with this plug-in system, if you want, of where we can plug the impact sector model if you at different places in the workflow, either together with their system model on the HPC, if it needs a lot of data, and instead of waiting for the data to be archived in the data lake and then read it from there, read it directly from the memory system, from the hot system, if you want what we call the forecast database as the simulation is produced. But other users can wait. The simulation is finished, and it's archived in the data lake, and then read the information there with novel data access mechanisms, which are given by the digital twin engine, which allow them to deal in an easier way with such a bigger amount of data. For example, if you want a wind farm. The information for one selected wind farm, instead of extracting the global fields, extracting the information only at the location you are interested. And for that, for example, we are developing something which is called Polytop, as part of the digital twin engine, which allows this more tailored access to the information.
So just to pick up on the question Alan had raised earlier about C3S, how if I mean that's a, could a, is effectively a user potentially of the system. How would you see that in interacting in terms of improving the climate change services that are coming out of C3S as an interaction with the digital twin?
I think for example, different users of C3S could in future also access this much higher resolution data, but maybe they would be interested along the existing climate simulations, which of course remain important because it offers larger ensembles, more models that we have in the climate twin. It's really to combine these different sources of information and to deliver better services ultimately.
Irina, I'm trying to come to grips with this interactivity. I think it's quite complicated to get your head around, at least my head around it. I mean, I guess in weather forecasting, for example, we're quite used to the idea of post-processing. So the numerical model produces a lot of data, and afterwards we can manipulate and analyze that data. So technically we call that post-processing, but it's actually an analysis once the model has run to generate the specific type of information that we want, or even to correct known biases in the raw data. Are you saying that the digital twin, in effect, you can do that as the model is running for each particular application or utilization of the forecast data? And if that's the case, what's the benefit of doing it interactively relative to doing it after the fact, so to speak?
That's a good question. And to answer that, maybe the best is I give the example of the weather twin, because I talked a lot about the climate digital twin. I didn't talk about the weather-induced extremes digital twin, where we have two components. We have a global component done with our integrated forecasting system at ECMWF. And then we have a local component, which is a configurable framework delivered by a lot of national met services in over 20 countries in Europe. It's led by Météo France. And what they are setting up is a modular framework where we go away from the principle, like you said, everyone is running its weather model over their country, and then wait that the model runs and then runs a post-processing for wind farms, etc. And so we go away from that fixed configuration to a flexible configuration where, let's imagine, a winter storm comes through from the Atlantic and penetrates over the continent. Then this framework would allow to track the system to zoom over to do a zoom at 500 meter resolution using boundary conditions from the global 4 kilometer run at 500 meters and track this storm. But when they launch the on-demand system, when activate this system, they don't only activate the weather model, but they also activate, because they know it's a weather storm, and they have examples where they have done this recently, they activate a wind farm parameterization in the model, which allows to detect what would be the capacity factor of the wind turbines, and basically when the wind turbines will shut off. And that can save a lot of money in terms of it's very important for producing energy and in terms of energy trading. So it gets the information much faster, and of course it doesn't do it every day, but it does it for important extreme events. That's why it's a digital twin focused on extreme events. So it brings complementary information targeted to extreme events, and not only for weather, but also impact sectors.
Yeah, so
So
can I could
go
well,
ahead,
sorry.
David.
Yeah, I just pick up on the impacts in general. So, extreme events we're concerned about safety of life and property and so forth. And a lot of work is already underway in terms of what we call impact-based forecasting. So we're actually integrating the forecast, the meteorological forecast, with data about the vulnerability of communities, societies, and so forth, and many other factors. So, I mean, basically, you're saying the twin can do all that as well. You can incorporate all the user-based data sets can be incorporated into the product. Whether it's post-processing, it's probably whether it's embedded in the forecast or whether it's separate is not so much the issue. But the fact is to utilize this technology effectively at high resolution. If it's as good as you're saying it is, then it should be possible to have a fully integrated impact-based forecasting. So the user, I'm the user in the, maybe it's heat waves, maybe it's health. I'm interested from a health point of view in hospital loads. I mean, how many people are going to likely show up in the next week to in a heat wave? So basically, does the twin allow that interaction so that you create an actual forecast of the impact?
Not yet. It doesn't go that far yet. It integrates for now selected impact sector models as a, to demonstrate capabilities. Now, to the extent this is scalable, that remains to be seen, right? So we can't expect that every user can want and come and plug an impact sector model into the twin itself, but we are trying to make examples, if you want to co-design examples for different elements, and say if the users who are in the extreme global extreme consortium are producing wind farm information, that information can wind energy information, that information can be used by other users. So it's not going that far, and it's also not replacing everything we have by any means, but is really complementing our capabilities and is giving another information to the European member states, which are the ones, and the national met services, who are the ones responsible for saving lives and property. So their authority is fully respected in the sense that they can pick up the information from destinationaires and use it to improve the way they prevent and limit the effects of extreme events.
So just to finally pick up on just a further point of clarification on your example of a storm coming through, which you then have a resolution of 500 meters as it comes across a particular region like Western Europe. It is the does the information about the detailed 500 meter type information that you're generating, does that feed into the global data that's in a sense driving that storm? Is it two-way interactive?
No, it's not two-way interaction. Okay. For now it's one-way interaction, we also have to find a way how the different overlapping windows communicate. At the moment it's doing like a zoom, which
okay.
Gradually. So of course, even in this, there is a lot of science that needs to feed in.
Sure.
But it's constructing something more flexible that we have done, which makes sense when you think of extreme events and you want to have something cross-boundary. In particular, where it can help, and the National Met Services who are in the consortium are quite excited about this, is that they would have another tool at their hands to help them in their mission to save life and properties, in particular when it's a cross-boundary event, which is not necessarily captured by regional domains.
Sure. Okay, understood. Thank you very much. You've mentioned already AI, and we can't, and this WeatherPod has been looking at various aspects of AI in the weather enterprise. And we know that there are opportunities from neural networks and deep learning. And I think you mentioned one of those already, which is the speeding up of the computation of certain aspects of the system. Could you say a little bit more about how you see deep learning? How important is it going to be? How is it going to be used in terms of the digital twin systems?
Yes, I think it's really fascinating. And coming from a background, as you know, of physics, I've been leading the physics team, and then I was the science lead for Destination S. So I was surprised by how good these models can be. And I read your conversation with Florian Allan, and I think you are surprised to some extent as well. But I do think they really have a fascinating capability of capturing not only what they learned, but also somehow they know something about the processes at hand. So they can go beyond what the training data set. So I whether, of course, we are still evaluating every day their capabilities, and in particular we look at how well they do extreme events, and we have to look how they will do in a future climate. For example, now in a new study that should be coming up soon, we are running our AIFS from in a warmer world to see what it does. We want to see how it can capture conditions which the model didn't learn. So even if we still explore a lot of things, I still think there is a lot of promise. And for example, for boosting the uncertainty quantification, they will be very useful. I'd imagine running, for now we run one deterministic forecast with the extremes twin. We know we need an uncertainty. So I think one can imagine running a small ensemble in the future of physical simulation, a physically based model simulations, and a large ensemble of AI simulations, but also using machine learning techniques to construct a PDF around the deterministic model. So I think they are really useful there. That's one use I see.
I guess you're describing a potential use. I mean, we don't yet know whether just because you can run quickly an ensemble, that it necessarily is a good ensemble, that it actually represents uncertainty.
Well, we have early results in at ECMWF. We have released our ensemble forecast as well, and of course, we invited our member states to look at the quality of the ensemble. So, of course, we still need to learn, but I do think it does look promising from that point of view. The second use is more the interactivity, which, as you're saying, it's right. It's hard to come with concrete examples of how this will work, and there are various ways in which one can interact with a digital twin beyond requesting a new simulation. And there, one thing we are doing with AI is developing a concept of a forecast in a box, where instead of giving people the data, having them to download a lot of data or to go on the system and do analysis there. You can imagine giving people an AI model together with the initial conditions, and then they produce data tailored to their needs at home, well, at home in their institution. So that is another way of increasing the interactivity, and then maybe they can change parameters and explore some sensitivities with this AI model. The other aspect we are exploring is easing the access to information. The digital twins will produce 1 petabyte per day, so that's a lot of data. And to ease the access, we are exploring the chatbots, weather and climate chatbots, as well. So we are working on that in Destination S. But we are also aiming going broader than the atmosphere. For now, what we have done at ECMWF is do a data-driven model for the atmosphere. We are also looking at doing components for land, sea ice, ocean to go towards an Earth system data-driven model and explore its use for boosting uncertainty, hopefully, and interactivity.
So do you think that you've stressed the higher resolution aspect of the digital twin, yet for the deep learning you have to have a learning data set, a historical data set, which at the moment everybody seems to be using the European reanalysis from ECMWF, which is very coarse resolution compared to the resolutions you're talking about. So David picked this point up earlier, I think, and that is, are we in a position where you're going to have to run the digital twin resolution to generate a new training data set? And that sounds like a huge computational task, if that's necessary.
Well, we are running, you're right, at the moment the training is on coarse data sets, but we are running the digital twins. We are running the extremes twin on a regular basis, the global data every day. We are running and that's on a time scale of 4 days ahead for the moment. We are running the climate digital twin to do a high-res MIPS scenario, which covers a past period, a historical period, and the future period up to 2040. So ultimately, we would like to have something covering 1990, 2040 at this 5 to 10 kilometer resolution. So we are producing regularly this information. And that's why in the second phase of Destination S, together with the European Commission has invested into boosting the AI activities to exploit the use of this digital twin data to further enhance the AI-driven models and maintain Europe leadership in this domain. And that's why we want to use this data and see how we can use it as training to develop an Earth system data-driven model.
I think we wanted to kind of conclude with a look ahead, but you've sort of given that look ahead, but might be very useful to really ask you about sort of the major future milestones that you see in terms of, so we've talked about, you know, a lot of things about what Destiny is today and a lot of the ideas going forward.
As I was saying, the system is gradually evolving. Of course, we are not at the end. That's why it's an initiative over 10 years. But hopefully, quite rapidly, after the system opens, national Met services who are in charge of handling these weather-induced disasters can feed in and the digital twin data in their systems and see how they can make use of this to prevent the loss of life and property. We will also evolve gradually towards how users can interact with the system, and we are working towards more concrete examples of this. But you're right that there is still a need to feed in Destination Earth's research and science and innovation, which happens elsewhere than Destination Earth. That's why the partnership with the Weather and Climate Enterprise in Europe is so important, and it builds on this. Destination Earth couldn't happen without whatever else is happening at the national and European level, which feeds in Destination Earth. The fact that we can run the weather twin at 5 kilometer globally is because it's building on the integrated forecasting system of ECMWF, which ECMWF has developed in partnership with its member and cooperating states over decades. Similar for climate, ICON is developing through a strong partnership in Germany. So it's all that knowledge and continuous development of these models, it's feeding into Destination Earth. And so are Horizon Europe projects, research projects, European projects, but also national level projects, which are feeding in the development of weather and science, our system, weather and science in general, and into Destination Earth in the future.
Just occurred to me, when you talk about these other programs and activities and model development feeding into Destination Earth, does Destination Earth feed into them? I mean, there's a lot of things, seems to me, that you've mentioned that can actually lead to improvements in the operational forecasting systems as they exist today, and it's not replacing them. This is a complementary activity, but it has the opportunity to feed in to their development also in parallel.
Of course, and it's a very good point, and I should have brought it earlier, but indeed Destination Earth is feeding in return in the existing operational capabilities, and we have many examples even at ECMWF where things we did, for example, for the climate for digital twin and in this project NextGEMS as well, and Alan will love this, is that we discovered, you may have read this, we discovered when we ran the first few weeks and we looked at it from a climate perspective, even at 9 kilometers, we discovered that the IFS was not conserving energy. And it was due to the semi-Lagrangian scheme. So it was due to something in the model dynamics. And then we fixed that because we figured out that we kind of knew how, but we never thought it's important for weather forecasts. And the precipitation forecast increased by a few percent. And that led in, that was implemented a couple of years ago already at ECMWF. So it's really a feedback loop where Destination Earth is building on what the community is doing. And in return, it's feeding back through efforts to adapt the models at these kilometer scales. You discover things that still improve the models even at the coarser resolutions, but also the development of new techniques like slicing data, data handling, scalability, adaptability, and portability towards new systems, and developing this blueprint of running distributed weather and climate across Europe, constructing a more modular framework for running regional forecasts. You know, that also it's the Met Services who are doing that through a contract by led by ECMWF for the Weather Twin, and they of course learn from this and feed into their operational systems.
Thank you. That's really very important. Any other thoughts, Alan?
No, I think it probably just remains for us to thank you, Irina, for this really interesting survey of what is clearly an exciting development and one that we're going to need to follow for some time as you become more and more converting the research into operational production. So thanks very much.
Yeah,
thank you very much for the invitation.
Well, that concludes this episode of the WeatherPod. We hope you've enjoyed it. Alan and I will be back next month, and in the meantime, please give us your feedback via email to support@gweforum.org.